When the Founding Fathers raised a glass to toast the signing of the Declaration of Independence, it was Madeira they drank. Our culinary curator, John T. Edge, has been tipping back a few glasses of his own lately, and he joins me now from the studios of the University of Mississippi in Oxford for a tasting. John T., good to have you back with us.
Glad to be here, Debbie.
So what has you so excited about Madeira this week?
I like the history of the stuff. I like knowing that the bottle I'm drinking has a history in this country going back 300 years. And I like knowing it comes from a place, that it comes from the island of Madeira, a volcanic island, a Portuguese protectorate. And the wines that come out of there are unique. They're fortified. In other words, brandy was added to the wine to stop the distillation, to stop the conversion of alcohol from the sugars in the grapes.
So how do you pick a great Madeira?
I looked to Manny Burke, a fellow who runs the Rare Wine Company. I went to see him recently up in Connecticut, and I learned a lot, and I think you would too if we checked in with him.
Well, we just so happened to have Manny Burke standing by listening to our conversation. He's in a studio in New Haven, Connecticut. Let's bring him in now. Hi, Manny.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, John T.
Hey.
Now, Manny, you graciously sent me some Madeiras to taste from your Rare Wine Company. I have four bottles open here, breathing now. Manny, I take it you've got the same bottles in front of you there in Connecticut?
I do indeed.
And John T., yours are open too?
Indeed they are.
Now, let's let these breathe a little more. While we get a little bit of a history lesson from Manny, how did Madeira become so popular with the colonists?
In the 1660s, the British Crown adopted something called the Navigation Acts, which required that wine going to the British colonies in the Western Hemisphere all had to travel on British ships from British ports. And Madeira was exempted, in part because it's not really part of Europe. It's off the coast of Africa. And so it became possible for anyone to ship Madeira to the Americas. And so that's really how Madeira became established in America at the beginning. What's extraordinary, though, is the way that its popularity endured well into the 19th century. It was the progenitor of wine collecting as we know it today. I mean, it was really the first cult wine that America ever knew.
Now, tell me a little bit about the four bottles that you have sent us. This is part of a series that you have created to sort of mimic what the early Americans might have been drinking?
Absolutely. And we've named each wine for a different American city in which Madeira was popular in the 18th and 19th centuries. And the style of wine corresponds to the style of wine of Madeira that was popular 150 or 200 years ago in those cities. So that in the South, a drier style was favored. And so the Charleston and New Orleans wines that we have are drier. And in the North, they tended to drink more sweet Madeira, and so the Boston and New York wines are a bit sweeter.
So what should we start with for our tasting here?
I would suggest starting in the South with the drier styles and perhaps with the Charleston Sercial.
Okay, shall we all pour a glass?
It's a pleasant sound.
It looks a little bit like brandy or whiskey.
I get this kind of pecan, this nuttiness, this richness, and I also get the bright acidity, the kind of lemony pucker that in my mouth waters. I want food.
Manny, can you tell us a little bit about how Madeira is made and what's different about the way that it's made than just your average wine?
Well, they learned early on that when barrels of Madeira were being shipped around the world, and especially going through the tropics, that it improved the wine. And nobody really understood what was special about it until they started shipping it through the, you know, across the equator and finding out that these trips through the tropics were changing the wine in a very dramatic way. And so they learned that Madeira should be aged under relatively warm conditions.
We don't really have time to discuss the flavor of all of these wines. So, Manny, which should be the next one that we select that would give us a little bit of a different experience than the Charleston.
I think if we go to Boston, which is the second sweetest wine, you really get a very different character, both not only in the sweetness but also the aromatic profile. You know, almost a Christmas pudding kind of character that you get in some of the sweeter styles.
It makes me think of a Butterfinger bar.
Oh, it is.
And I mean
good.
That in a nice way, Manny.
It's sweet, but it's not overpoweringly sweet. Now, explain to me when I would drink these wines. Would these be something you would drink more like a port, say, after dinner?
John T., you want to?
Debbie, the first time I had the New York Malmsey, the sweetest of these four, I had it as an after-dinner treat with a piece of blue cheese. And it stood up really well to that, to the kind of the ripeness of that cheese, kind of a balm to that bite. And it's the way I like to drink it at home.
Well, thank you for joining me today, gentlemen. Manny Burke is the proprietor of the Rare Wine Company in Sonoma, California. John T. Edge is the director of the Southern Foodways Alliance at the University of Mississippi. Thank you both for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Debbie.